May it please the court. I am Kathy Boucher, and I represent the petitioners in this case, the City of Austin, Travis County, and the Austin Independent School District. I am presently employed with the Travis County Attorney's Office.
Since the parking lot is probably only used one day for the... Therefore, for the other 6 days, it ought to be taxed.
That's correct.
Well, what about the church sanctuary? If they only went to church there on Sunday, should you tax it the other 6 days?
Well, our Constitution provides that an actual place of religious worship may be exempted by the legislature, which it has done. There was never any attempt made by any official to tax the church sanctuary because we recognize it is a place of worship and is entitled to an exemption. What we are talking about, however, is
where the church is going to park and go to church on Sunday.
I'm sorry.
Where are they going to park, you know?
They can park in a parking lot. What the problem here is, Justice Gonzalez, is that they have made the decision to go into business with their parking lot. There is nothing in the statute or in the case law which indicates the legislature could not tax a parking lot. But I think that in all honesty, there is not going to be a taxing jurisdiction in the state that is going to tax an ordinary parking lot that is just sitting there. But when a church goes into the business of saying, let's make a little money on our parking lot, then it should not be entitled to a tax exemption under the law.
Well, let's suppose they rent out the sanctuary 6 days a week to some group that wants to host dinners every day. And they rent out a portion of the building so that a group can have a cafeteria. But on Sunday, you use the Sunday school classes. Do you think the sanctuary then would be a tax law?
If the property is no longer being primarily used for engaging in religious worship, which under a 6 day a week scenario does not appear that then it would be entitled to an exemption if it is not a church, if it is a commercial enterprise that is operating this cafeteria, if the commercial enterprise is keeping a share of the money and the church receives a portion, it's not entitled to an exemption because the legislature says, the Constitution says, you may receive it for actual places of religious worship. And within those parameters, the legislature comes in and says, okay, it has to be an actual place of religious worship, plus it has to be used primarily for engaging in religious worship, and it has to be, that use has to be reasonably necessary for engaging in religious worship.
Well, let's say on Sunday you got 1,200 members that show up at the church, but the other 6 days they run a cafeteria, and during that cafeteria time, the average number to show up over a period of a year is 1,000 for those 6 days coming through the cafeteria. Well, the fact that 1,200 show up at church on Sunday, does that make it a primary place of worship because only 1,000 go through the serving line for the cafeteria?
I don't think you can look merely at the numbers of people that are using, although I think that is a significant factor, but you have to look at the everyday ongoing use of the property.
So you're saying if they use it 6 days for cafeteria and 1 day for church, that
if
makes
6 days a week they are operating, if White's cafeteria is inside their sanctuary operating a cafeteria, then they are at risk. They should lose their exemption.
Well, I suppose that they say the White's cafeteria, we got a lot of church members that work right around our building. We don't want to charge anything to have the cafeteria in there. But you can make all the money you want to off the cafeteria. We just let you use our facilities free.
Of course, that's not the fact situation in this case, is it?
No, it is not. But even so, if they said that, the subsection D specifically says the income from the other use, the income from the secular use, has to go to the church for the maintenance and development of its property. Under your fact pattern, all the income is going to White's cafeteria. So clearly, it takes itself out.
Go ahead, Judge. Let me clear up one point, if you will, that part of the statute, or the statute that says a facility that is used for an actual place of worship. Does that give that portion that's actually used in worship an exemption, no matter what it's used for the rest of the time? It must be primarily for a place of worship.
I'm really not sure if I understand your question.
As long as it is the primary place of worship of the church. Now we're talking about the sanctuary, of course, for practical purposes, the Sunday school rooms,
okay,
and all these other places. The statute says that must be the primary use. In other words, if you use it on Sunday only and rent it out the rest of the week, then they lose their exemption. Does that understand what the statute says?
Yes.
All right.
Okay, I believe just last thing you had a question.
Suppose, now, in our situation, suppose the church was operating as a parking lot for profit. Would your position be different?
Well,
instead of leasing it to this third party.
Then perhaps it would no longer qualify under subsection C of the section 1120 of the tax code, which says that the church cannot be operated in a manner, or excuse me, the religious organization cannot be operated in a manner that results in the accrual of distributor profits and the realization of private gain.
Oh, but they use the profits, though, for religious purposes. They operated the parking lot and charged. You still...
I think the question becomes stickier, but I think that if they are going into business and the legislature has never intended that a business operated by a religious organization for a non-religious purpose is entitled to a tax exemption, because then you are giving a competitive edge to a religious organization. They are, the taxpayers of the taxing jurisdictions are being asked to subsidize a business operated by a church that has a non-religious use.
Don't you think there was some difference between this lot and a true lot downtown, talking in terms of competition? Didn't the church use it for its own worship services, for people to park that were members of the church, for its meetings during the week, church activities? In other words, they were not excluded from using the parking lot, were they, simply because they were renting it out to others?
Let me ask you a question in this manner. The lease agreement provides that the church has exclusive use of the parking lot only on Sundays. They are entitled to use it, and also Wednesday evening. They are entitled to a total of 18 part afternoons, mornings, or evenings, not total days. So that is what the provisions under the lease. They can use the parking lot at any other manner, just like any other paying customer.
But they get 18 free spaces a day?
No, not per day. There were set aside, I believe, the evidence showed 7 spaces, which actually on the ground, there was a strip that said reserved for University Christian Church. The remainder of the parking lot was open for commercial customers.
One other question. What do you say about special issue number 2 and what significance did it have?
Special issue number 2 was not really contested between the parties. I think that the taxing jurisdiction readily acknowledged that a parking space is, for a church is something that is necessary under normal circumstances. That special issue, however, does not address the commercial use being reasonable and necessary, but merely says that the parking lots are reasonable and necessary.
Would the parking lot reasonably necessary for engaging in religious worship? Does that fit into the statute in any way?
Yes, it does. Section 1120A of the statute, which is the primary portion of the statute which deals with exemptions for real estate, says that you have to meet 3 requirements. The property has to be owned by a religious organization, it must be used primarily for engaging in religious worship, and the property must be reasonably necessary.
Regular
religious worship.
Is there a difference between religious worship and regular religious worship?
Does that regular have any meaning in this, in the statute?
Yes, it probably does. If you have, for example, you could have possibly have a church that maybe operates, I don't know, on a pale male, in a pale male manner, you know, once every 2 or 3 years or something. I assume that by regular they mean, you know, on a very periodic basis. There's nothing in the history of statutes to indicate what they intended by the word regular.
Ms. Boucher, as I understand it, you tried to get Judge Hart to submit the issue, separate the sanctuary from the parking lot, and he wouldn't do that.
That's correct, Your Honor. What I tried to do was I objected to inclusion of the sanctuary in any manner, because there was no attempt by the taxing authority to tax the sanctuary. That was property totally outside of the issues in this case. The fact that a church has a sanctuary and owns other property is immaterial as to whether that other property is entitled to an exemption, because it can still meet the requirements of the statute without inclusion of the sanctuary.
But in spite of the fact that he lumped the sanctuary with the lot, the jury still found with you that the whole thing was not used primarily for religious.
That's correct. I think the jury was able to see through to the true nature of the parking lot.
My question is, you mentioned cross points in the Court of Appeals. Is this one of the cross points?
Yes, it is.
It is.
It was cross point 3, I believe.
But in the Court of Appeals, as a matter of law.
Well, I have a number of differences with the Court of Appeals' opinion in that I feel that they use the wrong standard of error, but that's not before this court at this time.
You wrote the opinion, Judge Brady?
Yes, he did.
And how did that first issue read?
The first,
you had it before you?
Yes, I do. It read, do you find from a preponderance of the evidence that the real property owned by University Christian Church, including the sanctuary and parking lot, is used primarily as a place of regular religious worship? And then it contained an instruction. You are instructed that primarily as used in this special issue means principal, chief, leading, and may include occasional secular, non-religious uses of the property. And the jury answered, we do not.
That's kind of unfortunate.
Not in our
get the case all mixed up.
Not in our opinion.
Well, I know. I mean, it's pretty hard to say that a church.
Well, I think, what it is that a jury felt that the commercial use was so pervasive that it basically tainted the sanctuary property with it, the commercial nature of the parking lot.
And that's what the Court of Appeals threw out.
The Court of Appeals did not examine any of the evidence which would have supported the jury's finding. They merely examined the evidence which would support their conclusion that the property as a whole was used primarily as a
sanctuary. Is that one of your points of error?
It was point of error number one, I believe.
The Court of Appeals found that there was no evidence that the sanctuary primary use was not religious worship. That was the holding.
I think they said that the primary use of the property as a whole, including the sanctuary.
There's no evidence of that.
Right.
And you're saying that they did not follow traditional review of no evidence points, and
that's
that
correct.
They did not mention any evidence to your in your favor.
That is correct. They also noted. Sorry, Judge Robinson.
No, I just said I think I understand your position.
They also noted in their opinion that there was no evidence that any worship occurred on the parking lot themselves. And they erroneously stated that all of the income was devoted exclusively to the maintenance of this property, when it is clear from the evidence in this case that it was not. Subsection D, which is how you come into, which is a sort of a qualification of the entitlement to an exemption under Provision A, shows that you won't lose your exemption if you have an occasional secular purpose which we requested an issue on, the judge denied, if it is primarily, the primary use is still for religious worship, and all of the income is devoted exclusively to the maintenance and development of the property as a place of religious worship. If you look, that language, all income, has to be construed as all and not a portion thereof. You have to use, first, follow, first of all, the rules of statutory construction, which this court has held as being that where you have clear and unambiguous language in a statute, it must be given its common and ordinary meaning. And there is a presumption that every word included in the statute is included for a reason, and that every word which is excluded is excluded for a reason. Nowhere in that language in subsection D do you find that the, it states that all the, excuse me, the church's share of the income must be devoted. It says all income. There is the conclusive evidence, and I think it's not disputed, that the first $1,500 made under this lease agreement went directly to All Right Parking. Additionally, 50% of any money over $1,500 went to All Right Parking. So you had about two-thirds of the money under this lease agreement going to All Right Parking. Wes Evans, who was the vice president for All Right Parking, testified that none of the money that they received went to the maintenance and development, or, well, actually what he testified to was that none of it went to the church. He also testified that this was a profit-making venture. Under the provisions of this lease, and the way it could actually work out, it's that all of the money, it could go into private hands rather than to the church, clearly in contravention of subsection D. For example, in plaintiff's exhibit number 3, in May of 1980, the parking lot only made for that month $1,400. Thus, under the provisions of this lease, in that particular month, the church didn't receive a dime. All of the money went directly to All Right Parking. They're going to, I believe that they will probably argue that the stipulation that was made at the outset of trial that the church's share of the money went to the maintenance and development of the property brings them within subsection D. I don't think that they can, that that's correct. It is quite clear the language says all income, not any portion thereof. I don't think by any stretch of the imagination the legislature ever intended that a commercial joint venture with a for-profit organization should be entitled to an exemption. Under that type of scenario, under the church's scenario, we would never have an instance in which we could tax a commercial joint venture with a church, between a church and an all-right, excuse me, and a for-profit business, because all the church would ever have to do is say, no matter how minuscule our share of the money that we receive under this agreement, we can we use our portion to Well, I'll have to drop that.
Is there any commercial use, churches around the obviously don't take have parking lots or parking facilities. Is there no commercial use they can make of those parking facilities under your position?
If it is somewhat, if it is something like an occasional use, which is what the statute allows, it doesn't allow a 6 day a week, 24 hour ongoing continuous commercial use.
Where do you draw the line?
I think you would have to draw the line at, say, a 1 day a week.
Is that a fact question? Or does it boil down to whether it's just, is it a fact question?
I think it ultimately is a fact question when you have a 1 day a week use. But I think here, as a matter of law, 6 days a week cannot be considered a an occasional use.
Have y'all drawn any guidelines?
Have the taxing authority?
Yes.
Well, presently, none of my clients under the new tax code can determine what property is entitled to an exemption and what property is not. That is now governed by the appraisal district, and I don't know exactly what they use as their guidelines as concerning exemptions.
Well, if you could write the opinion, how would you write it?
It would probably start out as Court of Appeals is reversed and the trial court judgment is affirmed. It would say that under this fact situation, if a religious organization is going to use their property in a commercial manner, then they lose their exemption. There is nothing in the legislative history or in the clear language of this bill that indicates that a tax subsidy should be provided to churches in order to for them to operate commercial businesses. It would also state that in submitting your special issue, you have to inquire into whether or not this property is an actual place of religious worship, because that is what the guidelines within which the legislature has acted and also has been held by the court as to be a fact issue to be determined by the jury. You would also need to have a special issue submitted to address whether or not this use is okay, more than occasional. Because if it is more than occasional, then they automatically, again, are not entitled to an exemption. If it is only occasional, then the jury needs to determine whether or not all of the income is being devoted exclusively to the maintenance and development, of the property as a place of regular religious worship.
Would you like to get a drink of water?
Yeah.
Well,
did they help you?
Yeah, I think it
would. The parking lot, if it were not leased out to All Right Parking, probably would never be used as a place of worship anyway.
That's correct.
Under your theory, it would make it taxable every day.
I think that's correct. There is nothing in the language of Section 1120 of the Constitution that says that a parking lot is entitled to tax exemption. Keeping in mind that previously under Article 7150, you did have a provision which stated that property is entitled to an exemption if it is necessary for a use, enjoyment, occupancy of the same. But that provision was repealed when the tax code was enacted.
As a practical matter, though, were the authorities back when they were determining exemptions, taxing parking, church parking lots that had not been leased out to people like All Right?
No, they were not taxing. And I think that, we are reasonable people. We live in a reasonable world. We recognize that a plain, ordinary parking lot probably, even though the statute may not address it, should not be taxed.
What's the necessary language applicable to this case? Or would you say it's been repealed?
The applicable language in this case doesn't say anything about being necessary for use, enjoyment, or occupancy. What it says is usually necessary.
Go ahead.
For engaging in religious worship.
Yeah. Is that still the law? It's special issue number two.
Special issue number two. Yes, it is.
That it's just reasonably necessary for the
reasonably necessary for engaging in religious worship.
That's still the law.
That is still the law.
That's what you were trying to get at in special issue number two.
Correct.
Did the jury answer yes to that?
Yes, they did. If you will notice that special issue number two is confined solely to parking lots, whereas special issue number one, for some reason, includes the sanctuary. I believe that reason is they are trying to cloak the exempt status of the sanctuary over the parking lots, regardless of whether any worship occurred on those parking lots or not.
They were trying to win twice, and they lost once and won once.
That's correct, but fortunately, they had the burden of proof as to both of the special issues. They had to succeed at both in order to be entitled to an exemption.
Thank you.
I don't believe I have anything further to ask. Does the court have any further questions?
That's a good way always to wrap up. That appeals to the court. So thank you. Counsel?
May it please the court, Mr. Thomas Watkins will present an argument for responding.
May it please the court, I am Tom Watkins from the firm of Hilgers and Watkins, and I, along with Elizabeth Block, have represented University Christian Church throughout these proceedings. Let me point out that the reason we represent University Christian Church is because our senior partner, Mr. Bill Hilgers, is on the board of directors, and I want you to know that so that you'll understand that I'm under more pressure in this argument than I usually am when I appear before this court. I want to make sure that we understand that the taxing authorities are dangerous, and that they tell us now that they will not, that it is only the leased parking lots that they're after. But recognize that most of the arguments that they make would include the unleased parking lots, and that if they can tax them, they will tax them. So let us not adopt any kind of process from this which says we'll hold on the basis that every parking lot is taxable and then trust to the taxing authorities only to go after those properties which are leased. Because I guarantee you, as the crunch hits us further and further, the taxing authorities will tax everything they can legally tax, and we ought not to adopt a process which allows them to tax all parking lots.
Do you settle for an opinion then that just authorizes taxing leased parking lots?
No, sir. I don't want one that authorizes the taxing of unleased parking lots. Now, and I want everybody to understand that all the argument about no evidence and insufficient evidence on that first issue goes to the question of every parking lot, not just leased parking lots. There's only one issue that the court can ride on in this case in which a differentiation between unleased and leased parking lots can be made, and that's the income question down in point 4 and 5 that we're talking about that I'll get to in a minute. This is a tricky situation, and I passed out portions of 1120A because I wanted the court to see exactly what is happening when we start talking about taxing these parking lots. First of all, let's recognize the facts in this case. We have a regular church, an established church. We have a sanctuary which is clearly used for religious, regular religious worship. We have parking lots which the evidence is clear the church has to have and that the church would have even if they did not lease it out.
Does University Methodist Church have a parking lot?
Yes.
Where?
It used to be the Wesley Foundation across the street from the University Methodist Church, and that building has been torn down and it is leased out to All Right Parking. It's right across the drag from
University Methodist Church. Forgive me for asking, but exactly where is this church located?
This church is located right next to the University of Texas. It is...
Well, that's pretty close.
It's between 19th Martin Luther King Boulevard and the university, a little to the east of the drag. It's right, the double street that leads right up to the big fountain on the south entrance to the university. It is catty corner across the street from the University of Texas.
Immediately east of the University Church of Christ?
Immediately a little east and closer towards the university. In other words, University Church of Christ is right there on Martin Luther King Boulevard. This is 2 to 3 blocks closer towards the university going north.
So the real property that is owned by this religious organization is what?
Is the sanctuary lots. The lots that the sanctuary, there's two lots that the sanctuary is built on. Immediately across the street are two lots that that the parking lot.
Across university, the boulevard
yes.
there. Next to what used to be a row of sorority houses.
I believe so. I wouldn't know that, Judge. the primary use then is to provide parking to the church. There's no question in the testimony of that fact. Now the reason the taxing authorities got mad is because they decided that in addition to its primary use, they also wanted to try to generate some income. They also wanted somebody else to maintain the parking lot and to keep university students from parking there. The testimony is that if they don't lease it out to All Right, who puts the fences around, the lights up, and the little boards on it, and they maintain it, and they haul the people off if they park there, they have to place people hired by the church on the premises all day long, every day, to preserve their parking because the university people park everywhere there's an open space that you don't protect it. So that in order to preserve for them their parking spaces during the week, the lease was a cheaper and a less expensive way for them to provide for security and entertain the parking. Now recognize that for funerals and weddings, the purpose of this lease is that they have access to where All Right will clear out on any day where they give them the notice, up to a certain number of days, and I think 18 is the day, I'm not sure of that. But a certain number of days under the right during the year that for a wedding or for a funeral, they can clear it out on proper notice and they get to use it during the week and it's maintained and it's clear and it's there. Only way they can achieve that, they say, is to enter into this lease. Now,
is lease in evidence?
Yes. I don't know where the taxing authorities get the idea about a joint venture. We got a lease. We're a landlord. All Right, the tenant. Now the question is, how do you determine when you have crossed over from a permissible lease of the property or use of the property which produces income from secular activity and when you don't? The reason we are in this case is on the document that I gave you concerning the statute is that there is a statutory definition of when you have crossed over the line, and that's Section D. Use of the property that qualifies for the exemption prescribed in Subdivision 1 or 2 of Subsection A of this section for occasional secular purposes other than religious worship does not result in the loss of exemption if the primary use of the property is for religious worship and all income from the other use is devoted exclusively to the maintenance and development of the property as a place of religious worship. Now, I don't care whether the taxing authorities are mad about it or not. That's the statutory formula as to when you lose your exemption if you use or make money off of the property. And the question in this case is, how do you interpret that? There was a stipulation in which all income from the property is devoted exclusively to the maintenance of the property. And there's a stipulation that we don't make more off of this than it costs us to maintain the property.
Is that all income or all income derived by the church?
That's exactly why we're here. Is that question is the question in that section. Now,
I mean the stipulation.
The stipulation is that all the income we get. Okay, I mean they haven't stipulated themselves out of court.
That's all income.
That's right. We argue what this means is all income by the organization that owns the property. They argue that if there's any income made off the property that doesn't go to the church, then you lose your exemption. And this court is going to have to write on what that section means. Now, I want you to think carefully about what the word income means when it says does not result in the loss of exemption if the primary use, etc., and all income from the other use is devoted exclusively to the maintenance. Does that mean our use of the property or does that mean anybody's use of the property? We argue it means our use of the property. Now, our use is as landlord. We have leased it out. We're not parking cars, we have leased it out. And the use we're making, the secular, non-religious use of the property that we're using the property for, is as a leasing it out to this tenant. And he pays us money under the lease. All of that money is less than it costs us to maintain the property, and it fits within the statutory definitions by stipulation. The question then becomes, well, now, if the person that you've leased it to, if they turn around and use it for something else, does that destroy the nature of the exemption? For example, a daycare center. If a church leases out a daycare center and there is money paid to the daycare center for keeping kids, the money that they use to pay to their employees doesn't go to the church. The money they use for any other purposes which the daycare center might use it for doesn't go to the church, but it would automatically lose the exemptions if you lease it out to a daycare center.
Regardless of whether the daycare center is a nonprofit corporation or not?
It certainly would be because they're not, this says, is devoted exclusively to the maintenance and development of the property as a place of religious worship. So even though that income would qualify as a charitable organization's income for whatever tax problems they might have, it couldn't possibly fit within this statutory definition. Once you say we get to measure the second and third level of use once the church has made a use that turns over control of it for a period of time to somebody else.
But there's no question in this record to the fact that All Right Parking Company is a profit maker.
None whatsoever.
As a matter of public policy, why should you enjoy a competitive advantage over somebody else engaged in the operation of a parking lot?
We don't.
Well, I don't know what period of time the 29,000 represents. Is that 1 year, 2 years, or how much?
I don't remember, Judge.
But hypothetically, you could say that that's that much less money that the church would have to get out of the lease of the lot, because they're getting a $29,000 write-off, which theoretically could mean...
I misunderstood. That's a four-year period of tax.
Four-year period, all right. We're talking about roughly $7,000 plus a year. So theoretically, you could say we could fix our parking prices 25 cents a car less than the lot next door, and we'd still come out the same because we've got this initial write-off here.
Well, now, recognize we're not, in this situation, the only test is, did we get a competitive advantage in leasing this piece of equipment, in leasing this land, in our leased all right? Whatever they set their prices at is their business. We don't have anything to do with what they set their prices at. Do we have a competitive advantage because we can lease this property to all right because we're not having to pay taxes on it? Well, first of all, there's a statutory definition as a matter of policy as to when you lose your exemption. And we say we fit within the statutory definition. As a reason as to whether or not we should, we can't get fair market value for our lease because we want to have access to it during our funerals, during our weddings, on weekends, on Wednesday nights during choir practice, and all other times that the church needs to use it. Plus, we need to have a period of time. When we go into the market, it is our religious use of that property that destroys its economic value. And we have to enter into the best deal we can get with a commercial entity in order to generate income off of it. So the court really has to ask, we haven't got a competitive advantage over anybody. We've got a competitive disadvantage because we're trying to lease out religiously used property. The question is
whether Allwright has a competitive advantage over their competitors.
Well, and I think if the taxing authority wants to tax the lease value of real estate, they can do it and take that up with Allwright and leave us alone. And so far, we haven't seen any evidence, and I know of no reason why the taxing authority can't talk to Allwright about whether or not they ought to pay taxes on the value of the leasehold that they have in this property or not. But that seems to me where that burden should fall, and not on the religious institution, which would own the property, have all the expenses, would use it just like it's going to use it, even if there's no income. The net result of this public policy is we're simply not going to derive any income off of it. We will take it off the market, Judge.
The office building you're in down there on Congress and what, 9th and 10th? Let's say that, we know that the taxes that the owner of that building pays are written into the cost of your lease. Let's assume the building across the street from you is owned by a church. And under your theory, they don't pay taxes on that building. Wouldn't they be able to set a lesser amount of rent, thereby gaining a competitive advantage?
If they did that, they can do that. And I would suggest to the court that if the church is doing that and taking a competitive advantage of the situation, that maybe we ought to write some statutes that would tax it. I mean, I don't have any argument with the fact that we ought not to be impacting on non-religious institutions that might be in competition with this type of operation. But there's no evidence in this case that is happening. I mean, there's just no evidence that there is a competitive advantage being taken by a commercial operation in competition with anybody else because they're doing it on religious property.
Well, Mr. Watson, assuming that the legislature tried to declare the public policy in this instance in subsection D, how do you get around how do you deal with the word occasional? The legislature is saying that you can use church property for occasional secular purposes. They're giving you that right by this law.
Yes, sir.
Provided that the primary use of the property, and you say that means your primary use,
yes,
is for religious worship and all income, and you're saying that means all income to you, is used for maintenance.
Yes.
Now, seven that I could see the last two, that let's say I'd go with you on it being your primary use that's involved and your income, how do you get around the fact that this was not an occasional secular purpose? It was a steady, regular
purpose. Because I don't know any way to draw a line between occasional and regular. And that my presumption is that the statute defines that with its income text. And that the purpose of this is to say that if you're going to use it for something else, here's how you tell whether or not you've crossed over the line, and that is if you're making more money off the other use than it costs you to maintain your property, then you need to pay taxes on the property. But if you're trying to pick up part of the cost of maintaining your property, and the real reason, and I don't know any other word to use other than real, because it's as vague as primary or as occasional. And the problem is the legislative structure is a difference between primary and occasional. And those two words are not, they're not opposites. And so I can't give you, Chief Justice, any good definition of what occasional means other than to say the legislative intent seems to me that that use has an income test applied to it. Now, regular religious worship, we meet every Sunday, we meet every Wednesday, every time anybody dies or anytime anybody gets married, there is an event which takes place. That's where we argue that you have to look at our total use of the property. Occasional relates to two little pieces of it, that is the parking lots. That is, you can argue, regularly used for a parking lot for secular purposes because 5 days a week the kids park there who are going to the University of Texas. But that's only a portion of our property. And so whether or not we again ask the question of, well, do they get to carve it out? And that's the way this whole case got tried, and that's why we're here, and that's what the fight is. Did the taxing authorities get to segregate out the two parking lots and say to us, you got to prove, one, that you have regular religious worship taking place on those two parking lots? I'm willing to argue, Judge, that if we take our sanctuary, all of our property, all right, put a timeline as to the amount of time which is available for the whole property on a percentage basis, that you'll come up that University Christian Church's regular religious use of its property over time is primarily for actual religious worship. And even though they're real regular about secular use on a portion of it, compared to the whole thing, it's still occasional.
Did you almost faint dead away when the jury answered specialist number one?
Yes, sir. and I know why.
What do you say about that? I mean, yeah. There it is, the right or wrong, or what the judge messed up in the way he submitted it, or however you want to look at it, you've got a finding against you under Section A.
Yes, sir.
Didn't you really make the decision when you segregated out that part that you leased? Didn't the church itself make the segregation before the taxing authority came in?
Well, in the sense that we put a lease only on a portion of the property, that's right. But you see, Judge, they're not going to stick us just because it's leased. They're sticking us because we don't worship on it. You see, that's the frustration in this case from the church's point of view, is that the taxing authority wants to condemn us because we're not worshiping on the property, when what they're mad about is that we leased part of the property.
Well, how do you distinguish that between Davies versus Meyer, where they carved out and they said, you're not using this part for worship and it's taxed, this couple acres you are and it's not taxed?
Well, Davies, first we amended the statute to change the Davies case, and then 2 months ago we retried the Davies case, and the jury has now said that all of Camp Crucis is used as an actual place of religious worship, so we're going to bring it right back to you, I suspect.
Mr. In Judge Kilgore's question a while ago about the office building downtown, if the church owned the office building downtown, it was leased out exclusively for an office building, all the income went to the church, would it be subject to taxation because it's not used for...
That's correct. Okay. And the parking lot, even in that instance, would not be found to be reasonably necessary to engage in religious worship. And nobody in the world wants to listen to me other than me on the cross point, but I believe in our cross point. That is, I don't believe that this statute, as it is required, is a three-pronged test. Every taxing authority I've dealt with says you got to prove that the property is an actual place of religious worship. First, you got to prove it's owned by the religious organization. Then you got to prove it's an actual place of regular religious worship. And then you got to prove it's reasonably necessary to engage in worship. Our cross point goes that those are not three, that you get it if you get either one of the second two. If it's an actual place of engaging in worship. Our cross point goes that those are not three, that you get it if you get either one of the second two. if it's an actual place of religious worship, or if it's reasonably necessary to engage in worship. And I want to direct you to our cross point in our brief, is directed right at that. We think this property is exempt because of that second special issue, even though it was not found to be an actual place of religious worship, because otherwise the phrase reasonably necessary to engaging in religious worship is meaningless. It's just a superfluous to the statute. How can there be
a... You couldn't operate the church unless you had the park.
That's right. And how
it's
can
all
I...
all part of the pie.
Right. And how can you have... In other words, they say we have to have a finding that the parking lot is an actual place of religious worship, and I don't believe that. How could you ever have anything that is actually a regular place of religious worship that is not reasonably necessary to engage in religious worship? You can't fit in the first category without automatically fitting in the second category. Now, that means I've got to ask you to construe an and as an or. But that's been done before. It's been done in this particular statute. If you look at the rest of the statutes, you'll find they use the and in a list of things that were inclusive of all of them rather than an or. And I'm suggesting to you that the proper construction on this case is our cross point to say every religious institution has a right to exemption of all of its property, which is either an actual place of religious worship or reasonably necessary to engage in religious worship.
You need a finding on that by us in order to save yourself from a remand back to the Court of Appeals on factual insufficiency.
No. I think
you're not seriously contending that we can look at the record and not find more than a scintilla of evidence to uphold the jury verdict.
Yes, sir. I am seriously contending. If you look at our sanctuary and our parking lot and the testimony in this record, there is no evidence that this property is not an actual place of religious, regular religious worship.
That's a hard burden up there.
I understand that, Judge, but...
Let me see if I understand you. Looking at one,
yes,
A1, is it your contention that if the real property that is owned by the religious organization, that was undisputed?
Yes, sir.
You say all you got to do after that is show it's reasonably necessary for engaging in religious worship.
Yes, sir.
And that the second one, although found against you, is irrelevant.
Yes, sir.
You qualified by showing that the real property is owned by the religious organization and is reasonably necessary for engaging in religious worship.
Yes, sir. Well, and of course, we also bolstered in this case
so it's
by...
two-prong and not three-prong. I guess you would argue that the other way, let's say it's a property that's not owned by religious worship, but it's one used primarily as a place of regular religious worship and is reasonably necessary for engaging in religious worship, you'd say it qualifies.
If it's not owned by the organization?
Yes.
No, sir.
But what do you do with it used primarily as a place of regular religious worship?
Well,
write it out?
No, I say that those two are, it can be either one of those. That we're entitled to exemption of the property owned by the religious organization, which is regularly used as religious in regular religious worship, or is reasonably necessary to engage in religious worship.
Okay. Let's say some one of your church members left a 100 acres of land down in Chambers County that had oil and gas under it. The church leased it out, got them, and the will further provided that all income had to derived by the church had to go to religious worship. Got an operator come in, drill the wells, hit. The operator gets 75% of the money. You get 25%. How would that fit in the scheme of this thing?
I don't think on those facts that a jury would find or should find that it's reasonably necessary to engaging in religious worship. Therefore, it would not be exempt. Now, you see, it comes up in so many different contexts. And that last interpretation, the cross point, is the only one that makes sense to me, because campground cases in which you got 100 acres that you use as a regular place of religious worship, or you got 5,000 acres that you use as regular religious worship, then the question of whether or not what is reasonably necessary is a proper fact issue for the jury. But if we don't do that, the taxing authority is going to come in and say, here's your air conditioning unit. I mean, you got it over here on this piece of property, and you don't worship in your air conditioning unit. And we're going to tax that. Here's your kitchen. You got this kitchen area where you feed people. You do not worship in your kitchen. It's not an actual place of regular religious worship, and therefore we're going to tax that. Now, they tell us they're not going to do that. But my attitude toward wolves is that you don't listen too much to what they tell you you're going to do, and you try to fix it so that they can't do it to you. And I'm seriously suggesting to you that our cross point needs to be looked at because we think that it is right based upon proper construction of the case. But, Justice Kilgarland, even without that, I seriously contend that if you look at the record in this case, you can look at the parking lot and say, yeah, you guys don't worship on that. But once you eliminate that, there is no evidence that this property, taken as a whole, is used primarily as a place of actual and regular religious worship.
No, you said discard that. You say don't look to the purpose for which the parking lot is being used.
I say look to the property of the church, not just part of the property. They're going to do it. I mean, you can't. That same argument is true about that air conditioning unit. They can come in and say, we grant your exemption to everything else, but we want to tax this part. And if we can't say, look, we get to look at all of our property and see whether or not we're seriously a religious organization that is regularly making use of this as an actual place of religious worship.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm saying we're stuck with a jury verdict here.
Yes, sir.
And you can look at that jury verdict, and is there more than a scintilla of evidence to support it? And the fact that that parking lot is, by your own admission, you know, not used for engaging in religious, primarily for engaging in religious worship, isn't that more than a scintilla of evidence to uphold the jury verdict?
Well, the question is, and I don't really know how to talk to you about a no evidence question when you're talking about the word primarily. You understand, but clearly the statute implies that there can be some non-religious use of the property and still fit within the statute. The Court of Appeals decision in this case simply says that there is no evidence that this use, looked at as a whole with the whole property, is outside the bounds of what that statute means by primarily. There's just no evidence of it. And I suggest to you that that's a legitimate way to interpret it based upon looking at the way the church uses its property, and the statute does talk to its property. Now, the taxing authorities want to say they get to pick and choose, and they get to identify. And I suggest to you that if they can do that, then the term actual place of regular religious worship is meaningless, and they get to tax anything other than the sanctuary.
Mr. Watkins, I have one question before you run out of time. Under your argument, the taxing authorities could not tax the PTL Heritage Village, or Heritage Park?
Well, they're going to have a jury finding, in my view of the world, of two things. One, that the Heritage Park is an actual place of regular religious worship, and two, it's reasonably necessary for engaging in religious worship. And then three, they're going to have to show that the income derived off of that property does not exceed the cost of maintaining the property. And I think that's three strikes and they're out. I don't think they'd do any one of those three things, but that's my own attitude toward that operation.
Is there any legislative history that sheds any kind of light on this?
I was afraid you were going to ask that, Judge, because we drafted this thing and submitted it to the legislature in an attempt to try to correct the Davies situation. And why that and is there at the end of those, I have no explanation for. It should have been an or, and I have nothing of legitimate legislative history to shed any light on this.
Thank you. You drafted it, I'd have plenty of that.
Well,
there's a mistake now.
We did it wrong, Doug. All right. I don't want to believe
that harsh, but say we go with you on getting you in business and jury and all of that. You get over all those hurdles and you say that it was primarily being used for church purposes, or you can come under one. What did you draft this? This also draft this deed?
No, sir.
Looks to me like that it intends to apply to a situation where the church is just occasionally using some of their property for secular purposes. And I'm having a little trouble seeing how this is occasional. If you get a fixed lease, I'm wondering if they meant to apply to it at all.
Judge, let me tell you that I have big charts from Webster's on what regular means and what occasional means, and this does not say occasionally. It says occasional. And there's a difference in what those two words mean. occasional secular purposes. See, it's not even talking about the use there. It's talking about purposes. And that doesn't make any sense to me as far as, but occasional secular purposes mean something other than regular religious. And I'm suggesting to the court that when it applies to only a portion of the land and only a portion of the time, that fits within the definition of occasional rather than occasionally, occasional secular purposes. And that the income test is the only factual thing we can look to tell what the legislature intended by occasional secular purposes. And I can't help you any more than that because it confuses me.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
First of all, I'd like to address, I can't remember which justice had the question, but it concerned University Methodist Church and its All Right parking lot. The taxing authorities in this case, although it was not me, it was one of my predecessors, did file suit to collect the taxes on their University Methodist All Right parking lot, and we did receive our taxes in that case as a result of a settlement of that dispute. So this is not the first instance in which we have tried to recover delinquent taxes for a commercial parking lot used by a church. The evidence here shows that it would be a headache, is what one of the witnesses testified on behalf of the church. It would be a headache for the church to operate its own parking lot, to fence it off and not lease it out commercially. Well, there is nothing, and I believe the case law says that a detriment to worship is not sufficient to entitle property to an exemption. The fact that it would be difficult for them to fence off their property and not lease it out is immaterial as to whether or not they meet the qualifications of the statute. I think we have to look at, in looking at primary use, we must realize that what we're looking at is a 65-day use of the parking lot top versus a 300-day use for secular purpose, for secular use of the parking lot. I don't think by any stretch of the imagination you can say that, you know, with that sort of ratio, the primary use is for religious worship. The key difference between the church's position and our position is what this property means. In our opinion, this property means the property sought to be taxed, not every piece of property that a religious organization owns. If that were the case, we would have to sit back and look and see how many different pieces of property a church owns and see which ones are being used. Taking all together, if you ratio the church sanctuary versus all those pieces of other property that are used secular.
By analogy, though, doesn't the homestead include all the buildings that are attendant to the actual place of residence? Wouldn't this be an analogous situation in all fairness?
Would a homestead?
Would it be analogous to a homestead including all the outbuildings that are included within that complex of the homestead?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because, for example, if they owned a string of, say, gas stations and convenience stores near
their
property.
We're not talking about a string of gas stations. We're talking about one piece of property.
That's correct.
And you're trying to say part of it's taxable, part of it's not.
What we're saying is there was no attempt in this lawsuit to tax the sanctuary. And the only thing we sought to tax was a parking lot, which clearly no religious worship was occurring on. And it's not a foreign notion that you have to have religious worship
on the
property.
There's no religious worship occurring in the men's room either.
No, but I think what they're doing there, they're taking an example to an extreme. We're not going into a building, chopping it up and saying, you don't pray in your toilets and you're not praying in your hallway. They're going to a ridiculous extreme to make a very plausible, reasonable interpretation of the statute to appear ridiculous. Because what the statute is talking about is the primary use of the property sought to be taxed, not going into the property and divvying it up. I think that there is nothing from which you can say, all he has argued to this court, that all use means from the other, all use from other use as related in subsection D refers only to the use that the church puts it into. The statute does not inquire into the legal status between two parties who are using a particular piece of property. We can't look to see whether it's joint venture, landlord, tenant. You have to look to the actual use that is occurring on the property without regard to what they intended to use it for or what they use it one day a week for. You have to look at what is actually going on out there and where that money is going. In this instance, most of it is going to All Right Parking. They said,
what did you say about his point there that when it says income, all income going for maintenance, that it means all income that the church receives, not all income generated?
There is nothing in that provision that indicates they mean only a portion that the church receives. If the clear language says all income must be devoted exclusively to maintenance and development. It doesn't inquire into your portion. And there was nothing in the legislative history of the statute that indicates that they intended for it to be any portion thereof of the income. He has argued that if we wish to collect our taxes, we need to go to All Right. Well, these are ad valorem taxes on a piece of real estate. We have to go to the owner of the real estate in order to collect our taxes. Mr. Watkins talked about drawing a timeline. Even under their issue, under the issue which was submitted to the jury drew that timeline. They said, church, you're used one day a week. Parking lot, you're used 6 days a week, 24 hours, secularly. They waived that and said, well, we're coming down in favor of secular. They're not entitled to an exemption. They talk in their cross point, which he's raised here. He says that or that the and in the subsection A must be read as or. There's nothing to indicate that the legislature intended to inquire into or. As a matter of fact, if you look at all the cases which deal with this particular provision of the tax code, all of them inquire into the primary use of the property. Very few have gone into what is reasonable and necessary. There are instances in which property can be, which I think I pointed out in my reply to their cross point, in which property can be necessary for religious worship, but not be primarily used for engaging in religious worship. I cited you to Radio Bible Hour and Earl versus Program Centers. I think also a pertinent case which is cited in the original brief is the Swearingen case. These are all instances in which you have property which was necessary perhaps for engaging in religious work but was not being primarily used as a place for engaging in regular religious worship. Subsection D was drafted, I believe, specifically to avoid situations such as we have here. A leasing, commercial operation, owned in part of a property owned by a church, and then sharing the profit between the parties and being entitled to an exemption. I believe that is what the legislature intended to when they said all the income has to be used for the maintenance and development of the property. If there are no further questions, I have nothing further.
Thank God I did for a good job, and we'll adjourn the court now because that's
to keep those records.
Okay. And the city secretary, I assume, testified she had no records of that.
She testified that's right, that she did not.
Okay. This funeral director is that true that he testified that he had had problems in the past finding where somebody was buried?
Yes, if I recall the testimony correctly, he had.
What other testimony was it?
Judge, as far as on that point, I don't think there was any other testimony.
Well, he said that he testified that the city regularly gave it permission to bury someone in a particular lot verbally. Was that
right?
Testimony?
Right.
On the law point again, if I might, y'all don't seem to be together on this. He said that there are not very many cases, four or five, that they involve different circumstances. They're not clear-cut. Protective law is different. You seem to say that it is a clean sweep.
Well, Judge, I'm not saying it's an absolute clean sweep. I'm saying that there's a case out of Iowa, and that there are conflicting cases in New York, and there's a case out of Oregon. Essentially, those are the only cases. The only thing I've got to look to is the Supreme Court, which says that the overwhelming number of jurisdictions hold that. That's a 1981 U.S. Supreme Court case. They say that that's the trend. The one AR 448.
Well, I don't mean to be facetious, but you know, as a matter of fact, that they're not infallible either. We have better sources of finding out what the majority rule is than what someone said in any opinion.
Okay. Well, let's just count the cases in 144, one AR 4. And I think there are some 20 or so jurisdictions. There's probably 20, 25 that have not made a decision. I could go down the list: Florida, Louisiana, Missouri, and on down the way. But the easiest thing to do is just to call the court's attention to that ALR annotation. It sets them out. I don't think there's any question about that issue. The other thing that I did want to call the court's attention to is the issue of the standard that's to be applied, assuming that exemplary damages could be assessed against a municipality. And we cited these cases and discussed them a while ago, the Moody versus City of Galveston, which says that there does not appear to be any willfulness, wantonness, or malice. The Ostrom versus City of San Antonio case, which says that the case would be exceptional indeed when vindictive or more than compensatory damages can be recovered. The City of Katy versus Waterbury case, which says that the City of Katy is a municipality which